This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 11th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 155 and happy Thanksgiving. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. Pollster Mario Canseco of Research Co. analyzes his latest findings about the British Columbia provincial election campaign. And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or have John Horgan and Andrew Wilkinson not done enough to earn your vote? Specifically, they are not telling the truth about how they will pay for all the promises they make as they gallivant about the province in this election campaign. The NDP racked up a $12.8 billion deficit because of the coronavirus pandemic. About $5 billion of that was supported by the BC Liberals and the Greens at an emergency vote in the legislature late last March. Little did they know they were helping the NDP build its re-election campaign. Wilkinson wants to give BC a provincial sales tax holiday for a year and then gradually phase it back. The NDP, on the other hand, wants to give families $1,000 each and singles $500. Do I smell vote buying? The NDP platform contemplates a deficit greater than $15 billion, so I asked John Horgan how he will pay for it.
The platform is long on platitudes, short on details, especially one big missing detail is how you're going to pay for the ballooning deficit. What taxes and what fees will you increase?
We have no plans to increase taxes or fees. We have a plan to build out of this downturn by having a strong recovery. We already have private sector investment coming back to British Columbia. The film sector is coming back. We have construction going on right now. As I stand, we've got construction workers here today that are anxious to hear the news about more and expanded projects.
I have always been skeptical of politicians being secretive about the taxes and the fees that they will inevitably hike. Maybe you can blame George Bush, who said this in 1988 at the Republican convention.
My opponent won't rule out raising taxes, but I will, and the Congress will push me to raise taxes, and I'll say no. And they'll push, and I'll say no, and they'll push again, and I'll say to them, read my lips, no new taxes.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Coconuts, Jakarta, Eddie Van Halen's Indonesian roots inspire Asian pride as tributes pour in. Van Halen, widely recognized as one of the greatest rock guitarists of all time, died at 65 after a long battle with cancer. As tributes poured in from all around the world, Indonesians mourned as if they lost one of their own, owing to the common knowledge here that Van Halen was part Indonesian. Edward Lodewijk Van Halen was born on January 26, 1955 in Amsterdam to a Dutch father and a half-Indonesian mother, Eugenia Van Beers, who was born in what was then the Dutch East Indies. In Apple Daily, reporter of Hong Kong protests and Wuhan outbreak avoids legal charges but under surveillance. Chinese prosecutors have reportedly decided for the time being not to lay charges against Chen Qixi, a citizen journalist who went missing in February after covering from ground zero the Hong Kong protests last year and the early stages of the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan this year. Chen, 35, was released on bail under conditions that would last for at least a year and was expected to take quite a while before he could contact the outside world again, Radio Television Hong Kong quoted unnamed sources as saying. A message appeared on Chen's Twitter feed on Thursday saying it had been 245 days since he vanished and vowing that internet users would count the number of days of his disappearance until he showed up. Gigi in the Japan Times. Japanese consumers grumble about high mobile phone fees. The closed-door session organized by Prime Minister Suga was attended by members of the Association of Consumer Organizations and the Japan Association of Consumer Affairs Specialists, as well as representatives of groups for single mothers, older people, and freelance workers. One of the participants said that videos that are automatically delivered to mobile phones consume a large portion of data capacity, leading to a spike in bills, while another stated that those who fall behind on mobile phone bill payments could see their credibility damaged and face difficulties taking in loans in the future, according to the ministry.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland police fail to document and review officers' use of force at protests or maintain crowd control training, report finds. Portland police have failed to identify, document, review, or manage officer use of force during protests that have gripped the city since late May, an outside consultant has found. At the same time, a majority of officers have not received their annual refresher training in crowd control, de-escalation, and other critical skills that would likely reduce their need to use force on the job, according to city hired consultant Dennis Rosenbaum. Training halted due to the coronavirus pandemic has left 485 officers without required use of force instruction needed for state certification. In the Seattle Times, Washington State Attorney General fires chief investigator over his alleged behavior toward restaurant waiter wearing a Black Lives Matter button. A server said the investigator made a scene and stiffed her on her tip for wearing a Black Lives Matter button. Cloyd Steiger, a former Seattle police homicide detective who worked as chief homicide investigator for the state, showed extremely poor judgment during the incident and irreparably compromised credibility and brought significant disruption and embarrassment to the office. Steiger, 61, said through his lawyer that he will contest the dismissal. In Czech news, Nanaimo superfan receives emotional send-off from his beloved lacrosse team. Kyle Noble was born with developmental disabilities and health issues. He wasn't expected to live past 8 years old, but his family said he lived for his favorite team. For more than 20 years, Kyle attended every Nanaimo Senior B Timbermen practice and game. He also appeared in team pictures and even landed an honorary sports card. He died October 7th at age 32. Before he passed away, Timbermen players in jerseys came to be with him and his family. And this week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. NDP-licensed security firm linked to accused money launderer is free to operate while under review. Police close file in alleged racist attack on Horgan Aide's daughter at Gray's Park. NDP message box for the snap election. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news.
John Horgan.
Andrew Wilkinson.
Sonia First Now.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. We are beyond the halfway point in the snap election here in BC, and these might be the leading candidates for top quotes of the campaign. First, John Horgan on October 6th during the platform reveal in Vancouver. The platform includes $1.4 billion to pay families $1,000 and singles $500 each.
We don't want to be reckless. We want British Columbians to know that we've got their backs. We also want them to know that we're not just throwing money to try and buy votes. We're throwing money at people to stimulate economic activity, to keep them safe, and to build the services that people need.
No, NDP leader John Horgan is not just throwing money to buy votes, but it's one of the reasons he's throwing money. The biggest reason. BC Liberal leader Andrew Wilkinson on September 30th in Port Moody described NDP math this way.
We're all looking to get through this pandemic and lead a better life afterwards. When the NDP announced a $1 trillion program with 100,000 this and that, it has no credibility. Their housing program was supposed to produce 114,000 housing units. It's produced 2,963 temporary units. At this rate, we'll be waiting for the NDP housing program for 125 years.
I think I heard something just like that sometime before. Oh yeah, it was on the animated Fox sitcom Futurama.
$1 trillion.
Sir, that's not a number.
Oh, in that case, 50 million.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
A new poll from Research Co. on British Columbia's coronavirus pandemic state of emergency snap election 2020. John Horgan's NDP have widened their lead over Andrew Wilkinson's BC Liberals. 48% of decided voters surveyed support the NDP, up 4 points from the first poll, and a healthy 12% lead. The BC Greens have 13% support, and the Conservatives 2%. The NDP leads in all major demographics. Joining us is Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. Mario, we're beyond the halfway point in this campaign, this snap election campaign, and 23% of voters say that they may still change their mind. The Green base seems to be the most fickle. What do the leaders need to do in the televised leaders' debate?
One of the keys to the exercise here, particularly for the opposition, is to establish an emotional connection with voters. We see a high number of residents who are happy with the way John Horgan has handled the COVID-19 pandemic, and that is definitely helping his numbers and also the numbers of his party. And we really haven't seen a lot of fluctuation that is beneficial to the Greens or the Liberals over the past couple of weeks. The numbers remain fairly stagnant for the two parties, even after the Liberals made a few policy announcements related to taxation and to also public safety. We don't see the numbers climbing, not only for the Liberals as a party, but also for Andrew Wilkinson as a leader. So I think it's an opportunity to try to engage with voters who may be dissatisfied with the way things are going on other issues and to talk about what the BC Liberals would do differently. Trying to pin this campaign on the fact that the election is happening didn't really work that well the first couple of weeks. Establishing an emotional connection related to the COVID-19 pandemic will probably not work because of the high number of residents who are happy with the way it has been handled. So all that's left is to sell the idea of what the province could look like, and it's a good opportunity for Andrew Wilkinson to try to do so.
Now, your poll found that John Horgan's approval rating is 65%, while Andrew Wilkinson is a distant second at 40%. But you also found that the policies are more important for voters than the leader for those who are decided voters. Can you walk us through that interesting dichotomy?
Well, one of the things that we're looking into is what are the main motivators of the voters in this particular province? And in other elections, you do see a higher number of residents who are basing their decision on the leader. We saw that with Gordon Campbell. We saw it with Christy Clark. We don't see the same type of movement from the busy Liberal base that is highly motivated to cast a ballot in favor of Andrew Wilkinson. The numbers are a little bit better for John Horgan and the NDP, but the NDP tends to dominate on the policy front. And that is one of the issues that is definitely helping them now. A lot of voters who are saying that they want to vote for the party because of its ideas and policies. And we also see John Horgan with sizable advantages over Andrew Wilkinson when likely voters are asked who is better at handling specific issues. What is really curious about this is in elections past, BC Liberals used to be ahead when it came to this type of contest in issues such as the economy and jobs and also public safety. And in this election, we see John Horgan ahead of Andrew Wilkinson. So it's definitely a situation that has a lot to do with the fact that many residents still don't know who Andrew Wilkinson is. The type of campaign that we're running, where you can't have all of those live events and you really can't have the candidate shaking hands, is making it even more difficult for those who don't know him to try to figure out who he is.
The BC Liberals, of course, promising that PST holiday, no provincial sales tax for a year, and then it would be 3% before returning to its normal level. And they're also promising the referendum on Surrey Police. Mayor Doug McCallum is moving forward on switching the RCMP for a new municipal force, but the Liberals say they want to pause it and give the people of Surrey a chance to vote on it, because when they voted on it during the civic election in 2018, they didn't have a business plan in front of them. They didn't know how much it was going to cost. So you've got this one province-wide PST holiday promise, and then you've got one tailored for Surrey, because Surrey, of course, is a battleground with 9 seats up for grabs, and really whoever has a chance to get the majority will probably form government. Talk about that compared to what the NDP has done with releasing their platform, which included the promise of a $1,000 payment to families under a certain level and $500 to singles at a certain level. which got allegations from the Liberals that the NDP really is trying to do vote buying.
Well, I think what we see here from both parties is the fact that you need to get all of your policy out there as quickly as possible. And I think part of the reason for this is the high number of residents who are planning to vote by mail. You know, we've seen more than 500,000 requests for mail-in ballots, and there's people who have already mailed in their own ballots. So you can't really wait until the final stages of the campaign to actually present some of those nuggets of specific policy that could get people to move from one side to the other. If anything, the fact that everybody's voting by mail is forcing both of the parties to talk about specific things that they would do sooner than in an election that isn't happening in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. I think there's a couple of differences in the way in which they're looking at things. The way in which the BC Liberals are approaching this issue, particularly in Surrey, it's based on the seat count. I think they're looking at it from the standpoint of holding on to most of the seats that they have and making some inroads in Surrey, knowing that the situation there has left much to be desired. Now, one way that would have been better to do this would be to actually have somebody like Diane Watts running for the party or serving in some sort of capacity. And we never saw anything like this after Andrew Wilkinson became leader. That would definitely be more helpful in trying to engage with the public of that city, because she was such a very popular mayor. For the NDP, this is ultimately about trying to connect with voters who usually are there for them, even in elections that they've lost, by talking specifically about helping those who are in need and keeping the notion that the services that the BC government provides are not going to be touched. So the NDP is more about pandering to the base, talking about specific things that they like to hear in order to keep them there. For the Liberals, it's more trying to become a swing party for voters who maybe like what the NDP is saying, but aren't particularly happy with what is going on, specifically in the city of Surrey.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a bit of a change in the big issues in this poll. Housing, poverty, homelessness remains number one, but now you've got the economy up there. People are concerned about the economy, and then healthcare. Talk about some of that change there, and does that mean the Liberals are getting any traction for their message now that economy seems to be rising a little bit closer to the top?
Well, there's a little bit of a bump for the economy, but what is really crucial here is that we're looking into three different age groups that are defining these issues. If you're aged 18 to 34, you're more likely to say that it's housing, poverty, and homelessness. If you're 35 to 54, it's the economy and jobs. And if you're over 55, it's healthcare. So there's a little bit of fluctuation when you're looking into the data from a BC-wide standpoint, but we continue to see the same type of situation happening within the age groups. The numbers didn't really move that much within the age groups over the past couple of weeks. One thing that I would point out is very few residents are saying that COVID-19 is the number one issue that we're facing. I think the situation now is residents of the province made peace with the fact that the virus is going to be here for a while, and it's not an electoral issue per se. The other one that is quite surprising is how far the environment has dropped as an issue. We've been talking about climate change and certain things that need to happen. There's a very cohesive policy that has been put forward by the Green Party in order to deal with some of these matters. But the environment as an issue is at 7% in the province. Saskatchewan has an election 2 days after us. And the environment is at 8% in Saskatchewan. So it's quite complex, because usually we see the environment in double digits, sometimes even closer to 20% when it comes to the issues that BC residents care about. And it's just not happening this year.
And that takes me to my final question, that respondents say that John Horgan is the best leader to manage all categories except for the environment. And that is naturally the territory of Sonja First now, the Green Party leader. Of course, that is the foundation of the Green Party, is the environment. Do you think that the Greens could take advantage of some of the NDP's weaknesses for environmental voters, or for voters who are just generally concerned about the way the environment and some resource projects are being managed? Things like Site C, things like the LNG file. Because it seems in many ways that the NDP just picked up where the BC Liberals left off, even though the NDP promised to be different and promised to cater to those environmental voters. that the Greens so covet?
Well, I think there's an element of that, and we see it as well in the motivations of voters. Green voters are more likely than those who would vote for the NDP or the BC Liberals to say that they're voting out of disgust with the other candidates. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that it's a protest vote, but it certainly suggests that there's a certain level of unease when it comes to the way in which the naturally governing parties of the province have been handling the environmental file. And that might be one of the reasons for the Greens to be doing better than they did in elections before 2017. You know, we're used to having the Greens maybe in single digits, maybe 11%. To have them at this stage at 13%, it's lower than the 17% that they had in the last election. But it still suggests that there's a far larger number of residents of this province who want to vote for an environmentally friendly party, certainly more than what we saw in other jurisdictions, in other provincial elections, especially in Western Canada. So there's a little bit of that. I think ultimately it's a question of whether you think your vote is going to help and whether actually you have a candidate running in your riding. They are running candidates in fewer ridings than they did the last time. There's a little bit of a concern as far as their viability as an urban party. There's two ridings in Richmond where there's no Green candidate. There's two ridings in Surrey where there's no Green candidate. It's not a surprise that they're not running candidates in northern British Columbia, where natural resources are important, and it's very difficult to, you know, plead the message of you know, climate change and environmental stewardship. But, you know, they are running fewer candidates than they did 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And that might be part of the problem here. You know, maybe you have that environmentally conscious voter who won't have an option but to vote for one of the two major parties because there's no Green candidate he can support.
Well, thanks very much again to Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. You can find the results of his latest poll on the British Columbia election at researchco.ca. And we look forward to the results of Mario's poll after the televised leaders' debate.
Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the folks at Union Gospel Mission in Vancouver's downtown east side, the army of volunteers that serves Thanksgiving dinner to those less fortunate, a warm meal as the first long weekend of fall brings with it damp and cold weather. Thank you to Union Gospel Mission. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 11th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 11th in 1986, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev held a nuclear arms summit in Iceland? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Happy Thanksgiving. Until next week.